from the National Humanities Center at Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. This is Wayne Pond with Soundings, conversations featuring scholars and visitors at the National Humanities Center. With regard to programming standards and practices, what's the status of American network television? Where are its weaknesses and strengths? How does network television measure and address the needs of its audiences? I put those questions to two recent visitors at the National Humanities Center. Alfred Schneider, Vice President for Standards and Practices at ABC Television, and Eli Rubenstein, a professor in the School of Journalism at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Alfred Schneider is the executive at ABC Television who supervises the network's research about programming content. At the National Institute of Mental Health, Eli Rubenstein served as co-editor of the Surgeon General's report on television research and social policy. Alfred Schneider, you are with ABC Television. You are, I guess one term to use would be the network censor. Another way to put it is that you're in charge of standards and practices. What's the status of American television? What is its function in our society?
Well, I think it's a good place to start. I think essentially if we say that it's to entertain and inform, you cover in two words a large base. Mm-hmm. And I think my host down here, Dr. Eli Rubenstein, mm-hmm. indicated last night that we're a nation of a majority of minorities. Mm-hmm. And the word consensus sometimes is difficult to deal with. We're talking about diverse national standards, diverse programs, if you will, not standards, diverse programs and diverse scheduling to satisfy the needs of a varied and different individualistic society, uh-huh. which has a common unity.
Uh-huh.
So the consensus comes out of the unity of purpose, I think, of a democracy, its social problems, its political problems, mm-hmm. its economic needs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think programming in the entertainment area tries to satisfy those needs.
Eli Rubenstein, have I just heard a bit of a cop-out here? You are one of Mr. Schneider's friendly critics. You have written about television and children and violence. How do you see, for example, the question of direction and consensus with regard to network television?
Well, I think that the industry faces a real dilemma, because in fact there are so many different publics that for the industry to assume that one is predominant over the other, or that for whatever purpose they should serve one segment rather than the other,
mm-hmm.
I think they would be ignoring that in our democratic society the people who watch television literally vote every day,
mm-hmm.
by deciding which programs they're going to watch and which they don't watch.
Mm-hmm.
There's an interesting problem, which is a function of research, and that is that many of the so-called elite people, and I would include in that category those of us who do research, consciously or unconsciously want to impose our tastes on the rest of the viewing public. Now, it may be worthwhile to say we would like to raise the public taste, however mm-hmm. one might define that objective. But in a democratic society, to do that by imposition is, I think, to contradict the way our society functions. So that's a problem.
But that also takes into somewhere in what you're saying is that the American public does not in and of itself wish to raise the culture of its society and find what is good taste and what is bad taste.
Let's pause on that, Eli Rubenstein, Alfred Schneider. Do you see, in literary criticism, a few years ago it was fashionable to talk about the sort of mirror and the image. Who is doing the shaping and who is doing the reflecting? How do you see your function, for example, at ABC in those terms? Do you see yourself as an image of what America is, or do you go to work in the morning and say, I've got to do something about public taste?
I think it's more of an image. I think we reflect more, but I think in the words of Dick Salant, who was president of CBS News for a number of years,
mm-hmm.
He always said that there's an obligation to inch ahead. And I think that inch ahead is translated into the innovativeness and creativity that has to be brought to a medium like television for it to stay alive.
Well, this is one of the prices that we pay for living in a pluralistic society. Is that what it comes down to, Eli?
Yes, it is a price, but I think I almost it almost sounded to me like Al and I were reversing places here, because I thought I heard him say that television should, in fact, try to lead a little bit, and I would strongly agree with that. What I was trying to say before was, if the leader gets too far ahead of the followers aren't behind him.
Absolutely.
And so it is a matter of working in a way that does bring taste upward somewhat by whatever criterion, but not too far at one time.
Fair enough. Eli Rubenstein from the University of North Carolina, Alfred Schneider from ABC. Let's become concrete. Mr. Schneider, what's your latest headache? What is it that, what is it, docudramas? Is it something that's happened in the news? Give me a sort of flashpoint here to illustrate all of this.
There's a different headache every day. Yeah. I think in the area of programming, the docudrama, the requirements of mixing fact and fiction, the dealing with controversial issues as they are personified in entertainment programming is one of the current headaches. In the commercial area, presently the question of the acceptability or non-acceptability of public service announcement dealing with contraceptive information.
How are these decisions made? Alfred Schneider, you are vice president at ABC for standards and practices. Some people would accuse you of having a sort of dartboard. You go in and wham, we'll run it. How do you go about doing these things?
With great difficulty.
Elaborate that for me.
Well, I think that you try to seek the judgment, certainly in matters that have that you can call upon expertise, whether it be in the historical arena, whether it be in terms of psychologists, whether it terms of being researchers, where there are we're dealing with reality programs. The question of taste is obviously more difficult. You're dealing with very subjective matters. You seek out responses from the affiliated stations, who after all have the final determination as to what goes on the air, how they feel about the presentation of programs. We have Board of Governors meetings once a year where we meet with the representative body of the affiliates, who tell us what they think about our programming, good or bad, what it is that is happening in their community, the receptivity, the Nielsen ratings, what people are watching and what they will be willing to stay with.
Eli Rubenstein, let me ask you to comment here. What would you say? You have observed television and its effects upon society, its the way it moves in society for many years. What would be, you have him sitting right here in front of you, the man who runs standards and practices at ABC. What's the biggest failure? What's the most difficult problem that you've observed in this bailiwick of standards and practices?
I don't know that I could pick out one problem. I think that...
Or a category, perhaps.
Well, I think there's perhaps a process that I think might be improved. And Al and I talked about this briefly before, but let me just illustrate what I have in mind. There is a considerable use of a scientific knowledge within the industry. All three networks have... social science experts and people who are full-time working for each of the individual networks. They have consultants who are brought in on many occasions in regard to various scientific issues for various programs, both on the news as well as in the entertainment side. I guess my hope would be that there would be a stronger marriage, a lasting marriage, between what the researchers can bring to bear on how programs might serve the public good, and how the really competent creative production people would try to do that same job. I'd like to start with the premise, which I hold, that the industry tries to do the best job it possibly can. And I would like to see them do that using all the resources that are available. It seems to me that in some programs, an opportunity exists for making a more constructive use of researchers by making them literally an intimate part of the total production effort. Mm-hmm. And the example of that, par excellence, is what happens in Sesame Street, where there is a full-time research group and a full-time production team who have been working together over 15 years and who know each other and who work together trying to achieve a common objective. Mm-hmm. Now, that may not be feasible in networks, I don't know, but that would be one model to use. Mm-hmm. I emphasize the issue of process rather than a specific end goal.
How about this, Alfred Schneider? Suppose you could wave a magic wand and do this. Would it work at ABC?
Well, in a way it works, but not in the way that Eli would like it to work.
Why is it?
I think that two things. One is that it depends upon the agenda of both the program department and the research department. If you use a research resource as an avenue to increase the skills and the knowledge that enables you to produce a particular program in a particular area, as a library source, all right, mm-hmm. that is, you go to them and say, I need some help in this area, as distinguished from, and the very problem I find in dealing with programming people as vis-a-vis standards and practices, if the research source has an agenda of its own in terms of intent and purpose and objective as to what that programming should be, mm-hmm. then you create a clash and a no product. It's one of the things that I think he's suggesting is where the research team comes into the process. All right? Whereas I use research resource in order to evaluate the acceptability of programming, the program department is not using enough research resource for the development of creative ideas and the development of programming in the first place.
Mm-hmm. The making of it rather than the final product.
The generation of it, the creation of it rather than the review of it in terms of its acceptability or non-acceptability.
Mm-hmm. Alfred Schneider, Eli Rubenstein, our topic is television and American society. Let's talk about the news. What about the charge of superficiality? Eli Rubenstein, let me draw you into the conversation.
My reservation would perhaps best be illustrated by my concern about the very program that Al mentioned a moment ago, Nightline. I think Mr. Koppel, each night that he's on, does a tour de force. I mean, it's an incredible accomplishment to be able to take a piece of complex news that's still happening mm-hmm. and put on at least two sides, if not more, on that very complex issue. I guess being a little older than the average audience, my concern is that there is a presumed understanding of the issue at that point in time, which in fact is not so, because things are still evolving. And so every night, an analogy that comes to mind is every night someone tells you why the stock market went up or down, as if that night's interpretation of that day's stock market aberration is based on some important and profound scientific fact. It's all sheer nonsense. These are all just interpretations mm-hmm. of what happened that day. One should not assume you can interpret what happens in the stock market by talking about it every day. To some extent, it's an exaggeration, but to some extent, I think this is equally true with an evolving news story. So I have a very ambivalent feeling about Ted Koppel and Nightline. On the one hand, I think it's marvelous that you have more than a 5-minute summary of a complex news issue. And on the other hand, I'm made very uneasy by someone who asks these profound questions about an issue and asks for commentary on something that's still undergoing mm-hmm. evolution. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the answer to that, but it's a serious problem.
Well, in a way, Eli Rubenstein is talking about, we're talking around the question of assumptions that people like Mr. Schneider make about the American public. what you present to them, what the market will bear, what the traffic is like. How does that kind of thinking enter into decisions, for example, with regard to the news as well as the entertainment side?
Well, I think, coming again, Nightline too, the attention span of the average viewer becomes very limited because the choices have increased, mm-hmm. and the ability in a society to move and think and change quickly is there.
Well, what about the network's ability to extend that attention span? Do you feel a responsibility to do that?
Again, you're placing upon the network a great deal of power and ability to make people think or do what they want to do. Uh-huh. You fail to say that the viewer makes that determination of choice. The viewer makes the determination as to his interest and
we give them what they want.
His ability. We don't necessarily give them what we want. We give them a number of choices. You have some cable systems now, in which there are the availability of 100 different channels. Mm-hmm. The experience in some cable localities now, where there are as many as 20 or 30 channels, is that people select only 3 or 4.
Yep.
And they are making that choice in terms of what they seek out. What they there is a plethora. Mm-hmm. of material and programming available. Some very good, some very bad, some mediocre. Mm-hmm. As you expand the smorgasbord, you are more likely to find differences in quality.
Alfred Schneider, Eli Rubenstein, our topic is American society and television. We've talked about TV as a sort of force. We've talked about the people. We've talked about the culture. But let's look at another element here, and that is the government. Do you think that TV people need to be regulated, that they need to have the hand of the government in some fashion helping to guide their decisions about what gets on the air? For example, Mr. Schneider, I've heard you talk about the Fairness Doctrine. Give me 30 seconds on the Fairness Doctrine. Just exactly what does that mean for the American public?
Well, I think the Fairness Doctrine is a FCC rule. Uh-huh. But essentially what the doctrine says is that if you present one side of a point of view, one side of a controversial issue of public importance, you have a responsibility to present the conflicting opinions with respect to that issue. The debate now centers around whether or not, because there is a increase in the number of facilities available, there is no longer the need for a requirement, mm-hmm. because of the scarcity issue, the scarcity principle, to require a fairness doctrine. I don't know whether or not the fairness doctrine does or does not impinge upon the First Amendment. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, that subject is still for determination. The Supreme Court has found the Fairness Doctrine not to violate the First Amendment principles, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and it operates, as you say, in a sense as a guideline for the broadcaster and to determine how we will present the issues within his community as well as the agenda.
Mm-hmm. Eli Rubenstein, what about the government in American television? Does it belong there? What should the presence be?
Well, I would certainly be very strongly opposed to any kind of government regulation because I don't think it would work and I don't think it's appropriate, and you do have the First Amendment as a deterrent to any kind of government regulation. But I would make a kind of analogy which may sound a little humorous, and that is I think the government, like with the proverbial donkey, ought to hit the industry over the nose every once in a while to get its attention. Mm-hmm. And the way to do that would be to hold hearings on some things that are of public concern, to have various subcommittees raise questions. There's a question on the agenda now about whether the industry ought to put 1 hour of educational programming on children's programming every day, because there isn't presumably 1 hour of educational programming.
Is that likely to happen?
Well, I would suspect not. It was a bill that came up a couple of years ago. I think it's being reintroduced again this year. I don't know how likely it is to pass. But I think the very raising of the issue is healthy. I think that it's important for the networks to have a feeling that there is some government concern about what they do. Ascertainment, which is a device that used to be used to tell whether or not local stations were in fact serving the public welfare, is no longer required. I think we've gone too far in the direction of deregulation, but I don't want to go in the direction of regulation. I'm just saying that complete government hands-off policy leaves the networks, and I would suspect responsible industry people would like to see that happen, even though they can't say so out loud, perhaps, but like to see that happen because it keeps everybody's attention to the future. So that's the way I would go so far as government concern is involved.
Eli Rubenstein, Alfred Snyder, let's conclude our conversation about television and American society. Eli, what do you think is the, what's the strongest point that can be made for American television today? What would be your harshest criticism?
Well, I would say if one starts with the premise that television should give the public what it wants, then they probably do that. I mean, there are a lot of people watching television every night. There is a considerable diversity of programming, and people have an opportunity to watch what they want. Those people who feel commercial television isn't up to the standards they would like to see do have public television to turn to. So in the totality, I think that television serves that overall purpose. I would say, trying to look ahead some distance, that perhaps where the commercial television doesn't do as good a job as it might is, in a sense, to educate the public about what television does so the public can learn to have better taste.
You mean knowledge of the medium, not so much knowledge of what's on the medium.
Right, knowledge of the medium. And that ranges from public service announcements of various kinds to what ABC is doing with the president of ABC inviting commentary from people by going around and giving presentations, by in effect telling the audience, look, what you see on television is the result of a very complicated process, and the better you know what that process is, the better then you can evaluate what it is you see. There are all kinds of constraints on the news. It has to be done in a half an hour. There have to be commercials. Pictures are more important than words. I mean, there are a whole series of things you can tell the public. There is now a whole area of research which examines the structural quality of television. That is, with kids who watch, background music plays an important point. Quick and fast cuts hold a child's attention.
The editing.
There there are a number of things that are done which are structural parts of television, which the industry knows very well will hold the attention of the public. Now, the public ought to know they're being held that way. There ought to be something like civics courses used to have in the old days about how to read a newspaper. So they're having a more educated public than they had before. And then let the public seek its own level.
Mr. Snyder?
Well, I guess the best part of American television is that it's free, it's competitive, it's innovative when it can be, and that it provides a diversity of entertainment and information. I guess its criticism is we don't do it enough of the time, that we are constrained by various factors, time, profitability, taste, special interest groups, regulation or deregulation. But that's what a democracy is all about. We have the best system in the world.
What one thing would you change if you could, Alfred Snyder?
I don't think I'd change anything.
Alfred Snyder is Vice President for Standards and Practices at ABC Television. Eli Rubenstein is a professor in the School of Journalism at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. While serving at the National Institute of Mental Health, Eli Rubenstein was Vice Chairman of the Surgeon General's Scientific Advisory Committee on Television Research and Social Policy. The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Soundings on Television and American Society concludes now with a commentary by John O'Connor, Assistant Director for Programs at the National Humanities Center. Before coming to the center, John O'Connor was executive secretary of the American Philosophical Association.
Debates about television seem much more complex than debates about films. This is due in part to the fact that television is a more immediate part of the lives of individuals and families than our movies, and in part to the many things that television tries to do: entertain, inform, persuade, challenge, educate, and reassure. But over and above these reasons, and the natural tendency people have to differ in matters of taste, there are other sources of disagreement that really involve confusions. Clearing up the confusions won't guarantee agreement, nor would that be a good thing. But it will allow our disagreements to focus on the real issues, will allow us to communicate better, and might even help us to decide intelligently about the appropriate role of television in our society. First, there is a formal confusion. One person might say that a given program is good, and another might say it's bad, when what the former means is that the program is good compared to the other programs currently available, a comparative judgment, while what the latter means is that the program is not as good as it could be, a judgment appealing to an independent standard. The debate appears to be about the quality of the program, but it is actually about which standards are appropriate to use in evaluating programs. Second, two people may differ about the quality of a particular program because they differ about what features of the program are relevant to its quality. Consider a docudrama. One may feel it was unsatisfactory because it played fast and loose with the facts. The other may not worry much about the facts, choosing to evaluate the program as a drama. While they may discover the source of their disagreement over time, the sooner they do so, the better. But the issue can be broader or deeper than this. Suppose they agree concerning the docudrama that it had great entertainment value and not much respect for facts. That may trouble one person a lot and the other a little, because the latter sees television as primarily a medium for entertainment, while the former sees it as primarily a medium for the spread of information. Their previous concern with the proper standards to use in evaluating a docudrama may mask a deeper disagreement about the proper role of television in our society. Finally, a current debate about television points to an even more problematic area of possible disagreement. Networks have been accused by many groups of not being fair, of giving distorted pictures of historical events, moral viewpoints, and ethnic groups. A number of people accuse television of displaying biases in many ways. But behind the particular merits of any of these claims is a pair of extremely difficult questions, which are sometimes addressed explicitly, but often disregarded in the immediate rush to demand the righting of some perceived wrong. First, to what extent are people influenced in their attitudes and actions by what they see on television? Of course, this same issue of impact is addressed in non-television areas in discussions of pornography and sex education. Second, how can a medium that attempts to do so much sort out its priorities in such a way that integrity, fairness, and lots of other virtues are integrated into a whole that is not so bland and so lacking in challenge that no one wants to watch it anyway? It's fun to argue about particular shows, and it's good that people talk about fairness. But the sooner we see through the issues of the moment to the deeper questions, the sooner we might make some progress.
John O'Connor is Assistant Director for Programs at the National Humanities Center. He has served as Executive Secretary of the American Philosophical Association. The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. For a cassette copy of Soundings on Television and American Society, send $3 to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. Next week on Soundings, a discussion about education in the United States. My guest will be William J. Bennett, Secretary of Education in the Reagan Cabinet. Until next week, this is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Support for Soundings comes from the National Endowment for the Humanities. Listen to Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center inviting you to join me this week for the concluding segment in a series of conversations about media and American social ethics. My guests will be Alfred Schneider, Vice President for Programming Standards and Practices at ABC Television, and Eli Rubenstein, who served as co-editor of the Surgeon General's Report on Television Research and Social Policy. What's the status of American network television with regard to programming standards and practices? Some answers and insights this week on Soundings from the National Humanities Center on this station.